Hi, my name is James Zottarelli. I'm a MPH student at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston, and this is my first presentation in front of a large audience, large-ish, and also at APH, so please go easy. So what we did was a comparison of student and faculty staff who received the 2009 H1N1 vaccine during a campus-wide vaccination effort. And this is our APHA presentation disclosures. Essentially, there was no financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation in the past 12 months. And the purpose of our study was to compare factors associated with students and faculty and staff participation in an on-campus H1N1 vaccination clinic. And to help to try and accomplish this purpose, we set these learning objectives: to identify similarities and differences between students and faculty and staff, decisions to be vaccinated against 2009 H1N1 influenza, to evaluate the application of theory into practice, as well as to discuss at least one implication for our policy and practice. So I'm sure you've all seen this pandemic H1N1 timeline. It's from flu.gov, and there's a couple dates I want to point out. And the white line shows flu incidence in 1,000, while the blue line shows the vaccine availability in millions of doses. In April, the first cases of H1N1 were seen in the U.S. and in Mexico. In June, the World Health Organization raised the pandemic threat level to phase 6, which meant there was widespread human infection. Early in the fall, the vaccine became available and was available for high priority groups, so elderly, pregnant women. And then the vaccine was widely available later on that winter. And our study took place at the beginning of the spring semester at a large university in the Southwest. And we chose college students because the disease burden was heaviest among people less than 24 years of age. And the CDC had pointed out that college students traditionally aged 18 to 24 years of age were an immunization priority group. And part of the reasons why they were at higher risk is because of their age and living conditions, so dorms, close quarters. The research before 2009 H1N1 showed that seasonal flu and influenza-like illnesses had a negative effect on student performance, and that very few students took the chance to get the seasonal flu vaccine, only about 32%, and again that there was risk associated with living and working conditions. Research on 2009 H1N1 showed that there was low adoptive rates of preventative health actions to avoid contracting the flu, so again, hand washing, non-pharmaceutical interventions such as social distancing, and that the perception of threat was important to students' decisions to adopt preventative health actions. So the universities responded because their students were one of the high-risk groups, and before the vaccine was available, they had campus-wide health messaging for hand and respiratory hygiene, again, those non-pharmaceutical interventions, that kind of the ubiquitous placement of hand sanitizers, case isolations, and changes in attendance policies. So an example of case isolation would be, say, a student in a dorm room who's sick, they would have sick rooms where the RA would go grab food, bring it back to him. And he also didn't have to worry, because of the change in attendance policy, about missing class. Most of the professors were pretty lax about that, at least at the university I was at. And once the vaccine became available, there was vaccine awareness messaging, and that there was mass vaccination clinics. And that's where we got the study participants for this presentation. It was a mass vaccination clinic on a couple campuses at a large university in the Southwest, and data was collected. They would get their vaccination, students and faculty and staff, and then they would wait 5 to 10 minutes to see if they would have an adverse reaction. During that waiting period, we offered them a self-administered survey. So that meant we had a non-random convenience sample with a sample size of 293. We didn't collect personally identifiable information, and we obtained IRB approval for the study. And to kind of frame this presentation, we wanted to use the health belief model because it had been used repeatedly in people's uptake of health services and in particular vaccines and immunizations. Our independent variable were threat perception, which we did a perceived public health threat scale between 0 and 10. Perceived susceptibility, which was multiplicative, the likelihood of catching H1N1 times the number of people likely to be infected. We looked at several cues to actions, including previous vaccination behavior, pre-existing health condition, and whether or not they knew someone that was sick. And then we created several indexes. One was for benefits to action, so things like whether the vaccine would keep them from getting sick and spreading flu, and our Cronbach alpha for that was 0.755. And then our barrier action, so is this vaccine going to hurt? Is it going to take too much time? Our Cronbach alpha on that was 0.668. And then knowledge, which was kind of knowledge on how the flu is spread and also how they can prevent themselves from catching the flu. And the Cronbach alpha in that was 0.69. So all of those are pretty close to 0.7 is about what you want, at least for a Cronbach alpha. For our analysis and results, we did descriptive statistics to characterize our study participants, bivariate statistics to compare students and faculty staff, and we used SPSS-18 for our analysis. So looking at our descriptive statistics of our study participants, we have a pretty even spread of faculty and staff and students, and about 1-to-1 ratio between white and Hispanic is reflective of the university. It's a Hispanic-serving university, as is the male-to-female ratio, and the average age for all participants was nearly 35. With a standard deviation of close to 15. And in our bivariate analysis, we found that the two groups, students versus faculty and staff, differed in their barriers to getting the H1N1 vaccine. But across the board, they were similar in their perceived threat, perceived susceptibility, the benefits of the vaccine, and also their knowledge on how flu is spread and how to prevent themselves from getting flu. And let's see, these are the cues to actions. And what I thought was interesting was that there wasn't a difference in the pre-existing health conditions or perceived pre-existing health conditions for the vaccination. They did differ in knowing anyone that was sick, and they were different on their previous vaccination behaviors. So some of the limitations of the study are that it was a non-random convenient sample, which means there's limited generalizability of the findings, and that there's no control group. So we could only compare those who got vaccinated and with those who got vaccinated who were students and those who got vaccinated that were faculty and staff. So the conclusions, again, students and faculty staff were similar on their threat perception, susceptibility perception, benefits, knowledge, and pre-existing health conditions, and they differed on their perception of barriers, previous vaccination behaviors, and whether or not they knew someone that had got sick with H1N1. We also showed that the health belief model was useful to conceptualize the factors that would be associated with students and faculty staff decisions to be vaccinated, that we need to consider what factors motivate participation in a campus-based mass vaccination clinic, and additionally that campus-based mass vaccination clinics' efforts should include faculty and staff. And these are the references and author contact information. Any questions?
Yeah. I don't go back and do it over again, but in patient studies, we consider this population using social norms. And my friends are getting vaccinated, and so on. And do you think that maybe influences the social population?
I think that would influence it, and also seeing where they were living, whether or not they were living in close quarters like dorms or fraternity or sorority houses or apartment complexes. We did try and get a control group to kind of get an idea of possibly where other people would be getting vaccinations. And the problem we ran into is we had vaccination clinics set up at the two sites of the university in high traffic areas, but we picked areas that were high traffic for students, not necessarily faculty and staff. So we had a large enough sample size to have a control for the students, but we didn't have one for faculty and staff. And if I could go back and do it over again, we would try and get a better response. And then that would kind of allow us to look at where else are people getting vaccinated. Cool. No more questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.